It was the dawn of the third age of podcasting, 12 years after the B5 premiere. The Babylon podcast was a dream given form, its goal to discuss Babylon 5 episodes, arcs, and implications, to interview the cast and crew about their experiences and memories. It's a home away from home for fanboys, geek girls, and lurkers. It can be a silly place, but it's our last best hope for B5 fans. This is the podcast about the story of the last of the Babylon stations. The year is 2006. The name of the show is the Babylon Podcast.
Welcome back to the Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I'm Tim Callender.
It's Jeffrey calling from Los Angeles.
Hey folks, it's Michael. Normally at this point you would listen to the hosts engage in some interesting and somewhat pointless banter. Unfortunately, because we do so many podcasts around here, occasionally things get overlooked. Like this. We forgot to do a open and a close for this show. So, instead of making a whole bunch of excuses and not putting out a show this week, I decided that we just forego the head and tail and the pointless banner and give you the deep geeking segment. So here it is. Deep geeking in all its geeky glory. Next week, we'll remember to do the show in the more familiar way that you have come to love. Thanks for your patience and understanding in this matter. I return you now to your regularly scheduled program.
This is Sand Trooper TD0013 of a different point of view at ADPOV.net, and I need your help. Multiple sclerosis is a chronic, often disabling disease of the central nervous system that generally strikes people between the ages of 20 and 50. Symptoms can range from numbness in the limbs to paralysis or loss of vision. The progress, severity, and specific symptoms of MS in any one person cannot yet be predicted, but advances in research and treatments are giving hope to those affected by the disease. On April 14, 2007, I will be taking part in the annual MS Walk on the Wild Side, which is a 6.1-mile trek beneath the Arizona sun, and I'll be doing it in full Sand Trooper gear. Armor, helmet, boots, backpack, rifle, the works. I've pledged to raise $1,000 to fight MS. I'm doing my part to help those with MS, but I can't do this alone. I need your help. Now, until April 14th, the producers of this fine podcast you're listening to right now will have a link banner that says, Help TD0013 help those with multiple sclerosis on the front page of their website. This orange and black banner will take you directly to my page on the MS Society's website, and there you can make a donation to the cause. Don't worry, it's a secure site, and I'm not asking for anyone's paychecks, just whatever you can spare. And every penny goes directly to the MS Society, and from them to the research to help those with this horrible disease. From $1 to $1 million, anything you can spare would be most appreciated. For years you've heard me talk the talk. Now I'm going to walk the walk, and you can be walking right next to me in spirit. Any support you can give would be great. For updates on my progress and debriefings after it's all said and done, keep an eye on my website at www.adpov.net. I'm TD0013. I'm from the Empire, and I'm here to help.
Digging down to the obscurest facts in fandom, this is Deep Geeking.
And we're back for some. We're gonna always giggle hearing you deep geeking.
That's the point.
It's to inspire giggling before we start actually deep geeking.
Right, to make you happy, get you feeling good.
We're always happy and feeling good talking about episodes.
Exactly, because it's just like the bestest show ever. Although this tonight's episode isn't a particularly happy episode. This a race through dark places, in which it is revealed an underground railroad for rogue telepaths has a station stop on Babylon 5. Italian Winters starts discovering the true nature of the core. Okay, Summer.
I thought you were going to continue. Okay.
No, that was the
okay.
That was the dramatic.
We were
pause.
Shocked.
The dramatic.
Taken back.
Well, it was very much. You know, this episode. To me, one of the reasons it works so well is it really brings to a head the telepath threads that have been started in Spider on the Web and Soulmates. And, of course, we have the return of Psy-Cop Alfred Bester.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, he's...
Best role ever for mm-hmm. Walter Koenig.
I tell you what, I was reading on his personal website the other day that he was actually submitted for an Emmy nomination for his role as Bester. I don't think he actually got the nomination, but somebody somewhere thought, you know, this is worthwhile. And he is such a delicious bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we interviewed Mr. Koenig, you know, his comment was that he doesn't think of himself as a bad guy. You know, he thinks of himself as passionate and driven, and we see that here. You know, for him, the core is mother and the core is father, and if something gets in the way of that, well, it just has to be taken care of.
Yeah.
Well, you really see it in him later on. I mean, he really isn't the bad guy. He just truly believes, and he truly feels that way.
Right.
And everything that he does is out of that belief.
Exactly. Exactly. And even so, that still leaves him oblivious. As I love this scene. Okay, well, maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves. The episode opens with Bester interrogating obviously a rogue teep of some sort, and in the midst of trying to scan his mind, the teep dies, but he catches the location of the Underground Railroad, and of course leads to Babylon 5, and Bester makes contact with Talia Winters because she's the core representative on the station. And at one point they're having breakfast, and that's when the attempt is made by the rogues to try to kill Bester. Well, in the ensuing firefight, they kidnap Talia. And then in the conversation with Sheridan and Garibaldi and Ivanova later on, you know, he's like, well, you haven't heard from Talia? And he goes, no, I assumed she was okay. You know? And, you know, in his mind, you know, to a certain extent, it's his own inflated self-importance that he's not concerned that...
Well, no. It actually goes back to his belief. And we see him... We actually see him state it more clearly in Season 5. But he truly, truly believes that telepaths are a family and brother, they wouldn't kill each other. So he's like, you know, she's a telepath. She was kidnapped by other telepaths. She'll be fine.
Well, he didn't even think she was kidnapped.
Yeah.
You know, they got separated. I assume she went back to her quarters. I haven't heard from her, so that must mean everything's okay. So, but at any rate, the batonnage, if you will, between Garibaldi and Bester is very good. Would it interest you to know, Mr. Garibaldi, that I have a wife and a daughter? And we'd like to pack a picnic lunch and go out on this and under the dome in Syria Planum. And he claps. You're getting pretty good. Keep it up. You might have had me believing you're almost human. It's classic stuff.
Yeah.
Well, and in that statement, he is kind of saying that, you know, you could think what you like of me, but I'm no different than you.
Right. And now we're getting ahead of ourselves. There's, especially in Dust to Dust, there's a great scene where Bester drives that home about how similar they actually are. But in this episode, in Race Through Dark Places, he does say that to Garibaldi. He says, you know, you might think of me as a monster, but we both want the same thing. You know, we want what's best for our people. And, you know, of course, now you have to define people, and that's a whole sticking point. But, anyways, at that point, Talia is, when she wakes up, she finds herself surrounded by the rogues who are there through the underground, and we find it's the diminutive lurker who Garibaldi talked to in Chrysalis. And he was a friend of Ironheart's.
Mm-hmm.
So he and the other lurkers manage to convince Talia that things are not what they seem with the core. And I like his line. He says, you know what? Long time ago, it might have served a purpose, but it's something different now. You know, and at that point, she does appear to be convinced that, you know, Psychor is evil. And she goes, well, what do you want me to do about it? Snap my fingers and make it go away? It's like, well, no, but you need to know these things. When Bester tracks them down, and they have the incident where Talia and the other workers confront him, and then it appears as though she betrays the lurkers, the rogue telepaths, to Bester, and the two of them take them all down, and Bester walks away, and turns out it's just a telepathic projection. At the very end, as they're all going their separate ways, there's a great line. Again, the small lurker comes up and says, you know, you've got too far, you can't go back. And she says, well, you know, I can't escape, they're going to track me down. He taps the side of his head and says, no, up here. You've gone too far in your own mind.
Mm-hmm.
And that was neat. And
do you think he knew what Ironheart gave her?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe not the details, but he could sense it. I mean, he mentioned that he was P12, maybe even P13. He knew Ironheart had gone further. He could sense it in her. I mean, he says there at the end, what happened back there wouldn't have worked, period, the end.
Yeah, shouldn't have worked, except that you were here, yeah.
Right. So he, you know, she's got something more, and she says, well, what am I? And he looks, he says, the future, and then fades back into the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
That was chilling. And then, of course, now we won't touch on one of my pet peeves.
We can touch on it in time.
Yes, thank you. But for now, see, that was one of the things watching this episode gave me chills. Because in a certain sense, there was... It's one of those moments in the show where lines are crossed and paths are defined. In other words, up to this point, things are in potentiality. You know, does Talia... You know, where does she stand with the core? We kind of know her history. You know, she's starting to get the taste that things aren't quite what it seems. Now it's definitely, that card is on the table. Psychor is bad news. Talia is more than what she appears. And she could be the thing that tips the balance, not only in this one incident, but going forward in the future. And to me, that was great foreshadowing. And it was just chilling, because here's this woman, as I remarked in our discussion about Spider and the Web, that, you know, in a sense, she was just the little girl lost. And all of a sudden, she has this burden thrust upon her, you know, this great power. What is she going to do with it? And, you know, like the small worker says, you've gone too far in your head. You can't go back, period. But where you go from here, you know.
Yeah, you know too much to keep ignoring the things around
right.
you. When you know they're wrong, you know too much to just continue ignoring them.
Yeah. So, and it was just I remember my initial surprise watching that scene where they're trying to fight Bester, and they go, it's not working. Somebody's fighting us. Ah, oh, it's you. And then, you know, at that point, I'm thinking, you know, they failed to turn her. You know, it's like, oh, just when you think that the good guys might get the upper hand this one time.
Yeah.
And in a sense they do, but in true JMS fashion, winning this battle does not necessarily mean you've won the war, and in fact, it only just digs you deeper into it. You know, this was not a resolution. This was just simply a drawing of battle lines.
Huh. I'm trying to think. What was the... Dr. Franklin's involvement with the railroad?
Yes.
Was...
That was...
I don't know. Maybe just the suddenness of discovering that he's in charge of the Babylon 5 leg of the Telepath Underground Railroad was kind of a shock, because there was no hint. We've seen hints of his, you know, he has a very, very strong humanitarian streak, but we never saw anything that he was spending any time down below more than usual before this.
Well, there was the clinic that he was running in Quality of Mercy.
Was he running that, or was that more his staff?
No, he was down in it, yeah.
But he wasn't...
If you go back to that episode, he was down in there doing work, and he realized that the flow of workers had sort of dropped off, and that's what got him investigating the Rosens.
But was it him that noticed that, or one of the other workers? Because I thought he was just there like once every couple of weeks or once every week.
No, I got the impression that he was down there on a fairly regular basis. Not daily, maybe, but certainly spending more time down there than one would think.
Hmm. Okay,
well,
maybe.
Humanly possible. I have to go back and watch that one again. So, to me, that didn't bother me. Actually, I kind of like that, because that made sense. And actually, I love the scene in Earhart's. That's another one that makes me smile every time I watch it, where Garibaldi goes into Earhart's and hunts down a bottle of a... You here on business? Well, yeah. Ah, next round of drinks is on Mr. Garibaldi!
That's and funny. Then, yeah, the fact yeah, that he and, thought it was her.
Right. I love that. Yeah, come on, Ivanov, it's me, yes? And you're cute when you're investigating people close to you.
What did you think of the B story?
I loved it. I really actually did. It was a good bit of comic relief without being horribly corny. You know, it wasn't anything goofy like trying to put a motorcycle together.
Mm-hmm.
It again gave you the sense of what Captain Sheridan is like. Millions for defense, but not one penny in tribute. And we got to see some more very interesting character development between him and Ivanova, which I liked a lot. You know, if we have to stand together on this, Susan, yes, sir. And one of my all-time favorite jokes, knock, knock.
Who's there?
Kosh.
Kosh who?
He's in tight. I love it.
That just, I liked that because you saw the pain on Ivanova's face. Like, why do I have to endure knock, knock jokes? I'm trying to sleep. Just because
you're
restless.
Were you like this when you were married?
Yeah. And then his giggling like a seven-year-old at his own joke. And she just has this look of pain on her face.
Right. And what am I supposed to do? This is my superior officer, so I can't tell him to shut the hell up.
I can't tell him to shut up. I can't shoot him.
Right. I like that. Well, now, okay, and since we're on that, what did you think of the, well, let's call it the C story, where the Len and invites Sheridan out for dinner?
I thought that was interesting. I actually thought that was part of the B story, because you're seeing their lives outside of their quarters.
Yeah.
And they're trying to function. Well, they begin to function without having access to their stuff.
And you get to see the good captain out of uniform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, we developed the human. That dress that Dylan is wearing is stunning.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, and her hair was beautiful. So it was marvelous. The woman who sold me the dress said it would turn heads.
And you saw it. You're like when she's walking in the restaurant, people just stop and stare at her.
Yeah.
And I thought that was nicely done. And then you see at the end where they're still talking over dinner, and the waiter in the background's yawning like, okay, time to go. You guys are the last ones here.
Yeah. And that one little moment, after they've been talking about, studying laughter in temple and the laughing Buddha, and it seems we have more in common than we thought. And Sharon says, yeah, who would have thought it? And then there's that awkward glance, and then both of them looking away.
Yeah.
And I remember watching that the first time I saw that episode, it was like, oh, there's magic there. And what's even better is that over the course of the season, it just didn't, like, it wasn't a relationship that just suddenly happened because it'd be cool. It really, truly grows over time. It's like that's the spark. That's the moment where the spark was kindled. But it was just so nicely done. It was very romantic and all that. So I liked that very much. That was a great scene. So let's see, what else do we have to talk about with this episode?
The one thing I wanted to comment on, I thought Sheridan's creative resolution to the rent problem was, I don't know if that was intentionally a nod to Sinclair's resolution to the dock worker strike or not. I'm just going to take money out of the defense budget and apply it where it really needs to go.
On what grounds? On the grounds I'm not ready to fight unless I've had a good night's sleep.
It's going to be combat readiness.
It's interesting. I never would have made that connection. I just assumed it was the kind of creative tactical thinking that Sheridan was known for.
Well, that's just, I don't know if there is a connection. I just thought it was interesting that in order to fix the problem, you throw money at it, and you throw money at it from the coffers of the people causing the problem.
Right, yeah. That was. I loved the scene in, it might have been Earhart's again, with Franklin and Sheridan. I'm talking about it. You're doomed. We'll see. And then the whole spare cot thing. How do you rate a spare cot? I don't have a spare cot.
You requisitioned it. So. Speaking of cots, what do you think about that final scene between Talia and Ivanova?
Well, let's say this. Take a giant step back. Rewatching the series, as we've been doing for the podcast, I don't want to say taking a more critical eye, although some would probably debate that with me. But I've been trying to be more mindful of those overall connections, if you will. So maybe the lesbian relationship that seems to come into being in Divided Loyalties may not be quite as sudden as it once appeared. However, having said that, it still just looks like two people who are learning that they have more in common than, who would have thought we'd had so much in common.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why I think that scene is in there to echo between Susan and Talia that there's not as much difference between them as they thought. It's set up to mirror what John and Delenn discovered earlier.
Right. Although, see, again, we're with John and Delenn, it's romantic. I didn't see romance between Talia and Susan.
Not overt romance, but she brought a bottle of wine, which meant she needed to unwind and she needed to talk, but she needed to unwind before she could talk.
I'm oblivious to all that kind of stuff, though. I'm just...
I'm always good with hot girl action, you know. Just
yeah, but I'm just stupid that way. I mean, it's, you know. Anyway, but I did like. I thought the scene was good. I liked how Talia comes into Susan's quarters. You know, all you know, trying to be all smiles and happy, and I've come bearing gifts, and it's late. Well, yeah, and here's why. You know, lots happened. I need to talk to somebody, and you know, you could just tell that facade just immediately comes down. So, like, you know what?
Mm-hmm. So. And another tidbit I'm reading here on the Lurker's Guide. I actually didn't know this, but the Psy-Cop helping Bester interrogate the rogue teep at the beginning. That's
yes.
Walter's wife in real life.
I had read that on the Lurker's Guide some time ago, yeah.
I had not seen that part before. I thought that was kind of interesting. And yes, the chat room is telling me the same thing. Always a step behind.
They are still married, according to Walter's official website.
Yeah, and we, like I said, always, we're like a step and a half behind the chat room. These guys are on the ball. That's why we love them.
Exactly. But it's still our show. Yeah.
Okay,
any more thoughts on a Race Through Dark Places?
Other than the discussion we're still having, and it actually aired, Race Through Dark Places aired before Soulmates in the UK and after Soulmates here in the US. And apparently one of our chat room lurkers looked it up. Race Through Dark Places was supposed to come before Soulmates, from JMS's own mouth.
Sure.
So,
wow.
So we can ponder how that trilogy of telepath episodes flows in the order we're familiar with, or in the order originally intended by the great maker.
Yeah, I think for my two credits worth, I think this how it ends up airing in the U.S. run and as it's set up on the DVDs.
Yes,
on the I think that's a superior. I think that's a superior way to flow it.
Okay.
And I love at the very end there where just before the scene with Susan and Talia in Susan's quarters, the scene where Bester is leaving the station, you know, and there's that very stiff, professional, business-like thing, and where he basically, in essence, asks her to keep an eye on the captain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, yeah, I'll do that. And then, of course, the look he gives her as he's walking away, you know, as you mentioned last time, you know, he's been trying to scan her and can't get in. And I think he even mentions that when they're walking through the Zocalo earlier in the episode. You know,
yes,
she says, did
yes.
You know, he eludes her questions, you know, when they first meet with the command staff. Did you scan them? Oh, Miss Winters, such things are not officially allowed. Oh, so are you scanning me? You'd pick it up, not if it's a surface scan. I'd only do that if I suspected you of doing something inappropriate. Are you?
Yeah.
You know, and then at the end, yeah, something's not right, and he knows it. And
he literally can't put a finger on it.
Yes, right. Right. That look he gives her, and the look she returns, you know, kind of the arched eyebrow, like
what?
Like,
who, me?
Yeah, yeah. Great stuff. That
yeah.
I really do enjoy that episode very, very much. That's one of my favorites from the second year.
So,
we didn't even talk about Sheridan and Franklin.
I'm not thinking what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm not even thinking what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. And his you know, Sheridan's approach to Franklin. So you care to explain this, doctor? And, you know, I mean, he, you know that he, on a personal level, has come to think of Stephen Franklin as a friend. But it's all, in the end, it's all about being a soldier and being, you know, it's all about running the place. And this crosses the boundary. And, you know, he's understandably upset. you know, I could have you up on charges, and I'm more than a little tempted right now. And you can tell Franklin, he's got that sort of, you know, I got my hand caught in a cookie jar look. It's like, well, you know, he's doing the right thing.
Yeah. And that actually echoes in some behavior later we see of the command staff when they need to keep several secrets. But that's
yes.
discussion for later debriefing sessions. All right. If you want to contact us, you can send us an email at babylonpodcast@gmail.com or call in with your very own voicemail message. That number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year of the Great War came upon us all.
And we will see you next time on the other side of the gate.